It's a swampy, desolate area. It's a wooded area.
There's thousands of canals down there. It's populated with alligators and snakes. It's just an area that no one would really want to just go to and hang out. It's the ideal spot to dump a body.
And when we first went down there, it was pitch black. And I shined a flashlight into the water, and I was able to see the barrels. We only had a torso. The head, hands, and feet were missing.
All right, ready to go, Judge Alex?
And I've tried some of the worst people there are, but this case really got to me. The victims were murdered one night in 1995. A young, successful, good-looking couple. Frank was 32 years old. He made a ton of money. He was a millionaire. Christina was his 23-year-old girlfriend, and they had everything. Boats, hot cars, Lamborghinis. They were living the life. This case had everything. It had sex, it had violence, dark, dark humor.
We had a group of muscleheads.
These were a bunch of meatheads, guys who were working out in the gym, probably taking steroids.
One of their targets was Frank and Christina.
Basically, the plan was kidnap wealthy people, take everything they have, and then kill them. They got away with over $1 million. The most fascinating case I think I've ever tried. Hollywood had to make a movie out of it.
When's the last time you paid your rent when it was due?
I got a plan to change that.
If somebody scripted this, you would say, well, that's ridiculous. Except that it actually was true.
He loved fast cars, beautiful girls, and life.
Susanna Griga can never forget the kidnapping of her brother Frank and his girlfriend Christina Furton back in 1995.
She was very beautiful. She was only 23 years old. My heart breaks when I think what she went through.
Very handsome couple. They looked like they were made for each other.
Felix Jimenez, now retired from the Metro Dade Police Homicide Department, was lead detective on the case.
Frank was the American success story. An immigrant came to this country with $10 in his pocket and made millions.
He came from Budapest, Hungary, and found a minimum wage job in New York City.
It was like a service station. He was changing the oil, washing cars. What he accomplished should make everyone proud because he went from nowhere to a millionaire on his own, just by using his own resources.
In fewer than 10 years, he was living in an upscale Miami enclave called Golden Beach, running a phone sex line empire. He was on top of the world until May 24th, 1995.
I started calling him and he wouldn't pick up the phone. I kind of knew that something really bad happened then.
The disappearance of Frank and Christina would become one of Miami's most notorious crimes. But who would want to kidnap them?
How did this all go down?
We got a call that there was a wealthy couple that was missing out of Golden Beach. That was a little strange because in homicide, we need a crime scene. We need a dead body to respond to. There's few and far between when there's actually a missing person that we would respond. It has to be highly suspicious circumstances. And it so happens in this case, there was.
At first, the detectives hoped they could find Frank and Christina alive.
A missing Hungarian couple had said that they were going to the Bahamas the following day. So all their friends assumed that the reason they weren't home was because they were in the Bahamas.
But that all changed, though, when police made a stunning discovery.
Their Lamborghini was found in an abandoned wooded area far outside of Miami.
At this point, we realized that something bad had happened to this couple.
Sal Garofalo, also retired, worked the case for his boss, Felix Jimenez. Now both CBS News consultants.
We got information and we ended up going to Golden Beach.
So you have a missing Hungarian couple and a Lamborghini.
We had more information than that. We had a next door neighbor that had actually been to the house the last time they were seen alive. And they invited her in, introduced her to two muscle-bound men that were driving a brand new gold Mercedes and told them that they were going out to dinner to discuss a business deal.
That neighbor would tell police she met the driver of the gold Mercedes and knew his name. Danny Lugo.
Danny was a big, muscular guy.
Police would soon learn that Lugo was a burly ex-convict who had served time for running a phony loan scam operation. After his release, he became the manager of a suburban Miami health club called the Sun Gym.
It's real close to here, Sal. This is where Sun Gym was located. This is what we could call the gang headquarters.
Danny Lugo was a Puerto Rican Cuban kid from the Bronx.
He thought he was smarter than anybody else. He had a way of convincing people to do things that they didn't want to do.
The investigation into Frank and Christina's disappearance continued. Detectives learned Lugo was the leader of a group made up of drifters and petty thieves who hung out at the Sun Gym. Lugo's main partner in crime was another musclehead, Adrian Dorball.
Adrian Dorball was Danny Lugo's protege.
Dorball was just an evil. He reminded me of just being an evil guy.
He was a steroid freak, 5'7" tall, 5'7" wide. He did everything and anything that Danny told him to do.
In May 1995, Danny Lugo and Adrian Dorball would be at the center of one of the most notorious crimes in Miami history, a complicated and deadly plot that involved kidnapping, money, and murder.
My name is Daniel Lugo.
18 years later, the story was too much for Hollywood to resist.
I watch a lot of movies, Paul. I know what I'm doing.
In the movie Pain and Gain, Lugo is portrayed by Mark Wahlberg. The film was released by Paramount Pictures. Paramount is part of Viacom.
If you're willing to do the work, you can have anything. That's what makes the US of A great.
The movie captures what Lugo was about in real life, his infatuation with getting rich, says Patty Barrientos, who worked alongside him at a gym.
He said, I'm going to have a lot of money. I want to grow. I want to be somebody very big.
He was money hungry.
Yes.
And with the little money he had, he spent a lot of it here at the Solid Gold Strip Club. It was here he began an affair with a one-time penthouse model turned exotic dancer named Sabina Petrescu.
She was a very, very attractive woman. She fell for Danny and believed everything he told her.
Sabina was another recent immigrant who made a splash in Miami. She was a finalist in the Miss Romania contest in 1990, then came to the United States to begin a modeling career. She made it onto the pages of Penthouse magazine, but filled the rest of her time as an exotic dancer.
Danny treated her well. He gave her a BMW.
Sabina would play a crucial role as police continued gathering more evidence connecting Lugo and Dorball to the disappearance of Frank and Christina.
We have the housekeeper who was also at the home when the muscle men were there. We have the next door neighbor. We show them photographs. They make identification. So we have a lot to go on.
So search warrants were executed?
Yes.
Search warrants for the homes of Lugo and Dorball and their associates.
I mean, we had so many cops, it wasn't even funny.
In fact, we mobilized right here at this park.
Right.
Police quickly hit pay dirt in the apartment of Danny Lugo's girlfriend.
There was some damning evidence there. Bloody clothing belonging to Frank and Christina. There was the kidnap kit, a case with duct tape,
guns,
handcuffs. There was so much evidence in that apartment.
Soon, Adrian Dorball was in custody and refused to talk to police.
The main guy that we're after, Danny Lugo, is nowhere to be found.
Danny Lugo had given them the slip.
This case was all over the news. Miami was riveted as to this attractive Hungarian couple, you know, this yellow Lamborghini found in the Everglades, and that they're missing. And they continued to be missing.
But detectives had lost their lead suspect, Danny Lugo.
Lugo's gone. We have a warrant for his arrest. He's just vanished. We don't know where he is.
They did have one good lead.
We had his girlfriend, Sabina Petrescu.
Sabina Petrescu, Lugo's girlfriend, the magazine model turned stripper, had quite a story to tell. She said her boyfriend wasn't a criminal. He told her he was a CIA agent.
Number one, she was smitten with Danny Lugo. And number two, I think she believed what he was saying, that he was a CIA operative, that he was working for the US government in kidnapping people that were dangerous to this country.
Danny Lugo had convinced her he was a spy on a secret mission. So for now, she wouldn't tell detectives where Danny was, but it would be just a matter of time. In an incredible twist of fate, detectives in another department at Metro Dade Police had also been looking at Danny Lugo and Adrian Dorball. Their case was the bizarre kidnapping of another Miami millionaire. Now Lugo and Dorball were front and center of two cases. The Miami millionaire was Mark Schiller, an accountant.
He was Argentinian born, grew up in the US, went to school, got his CPA license. He had a medical billing business that did very well.
The two crimes would become one huge case, a case that Judge Alex Ferrer, now TV's Judge Alex, and Miami-Dade prosecutor Gail Levine would never forget.
This case was what made me who I am today, a career prosecutor.
Of all the cases I've tried, this was by far the most fascinating case.
Schiller would eventually tell police a wild story, that 5 months before the murders of Frank and Christina, Schiller himself had been grabbed by a gang. Bound and gagged, he'd be dumped in an industrial warehouse for more than a month.
So this is it?
This is it.
So this was an empty warehouse that they had rented?
This is a warehouse that was rented by one of the members of the Sun Jin gang. They drove the van with Schiller inside into the warehouse.
Mark Schiller was the perfect victim because he was involved in something that was illegal.
I think he got greedy and started getting involved in Medicare fraud.
Danny Lugo learned about Schiller from this man, George Delgado, who also worked out at the Sun Gym. Schiller and Delgado had been in business.
Him and George Delgado started a mortgage business together.
But business went badly. And later, Schiller and Delgado had a falling out over a deal. Delgado wanted revenge and told Lugo Schiller would be an easy mark.
They basically go, well, he's not going to go to the cops. He was involved in Medicare fraud. We'll shake him down.
So what was the plan?
The plan was actually very simple. Kidnap Mark Schiller, have him write his own ransom, and then kill him.
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
But catching Schiller to shake him down was tougher than it looked.
It would be funny if it wasn't so tragic because they made these stupid attempts. They would hide in his yard under blankets like they were some kind of ninja, waiting for him to come out to get the paper at 5 a.m. and they were going to kidnap him, only to be surprised that cars were coming down the street and lighting him up with their headlights. So then they're running through the yards, you know, screaming, abort, abort, like they were on some secret mission for the government.
Hollywood could not resist this crazy scene. The gang used costumes and comic book code names like Batman and Robin.
There he is!
And tried to stage an accident to kidnap Schiller.
They were waiting for him to drive by to stage this accident. They turn the car off, and as he's driving by, they're cranking it, and the car won't start. And he just goes driving by. So it's like the Keystone Cops gone bad.
Finally, after multiple attempts, the gang that couldn't shoot straight enlisted some serious muscle and planned to take Schiller down outside a restaurant he owned.
They waited in a van, and they had their biggest gym rats come out.
I'm a good-hearted person. I just made a mistake.
The man, who we agreed to obscure and alter his voice, worked with the Sun Jim gang to kidnap Schiller.
I was pretty hardcore.
At your peak, you could bench 475 pounds?
505.
505? How big were you?
I was like a lean 270 pounds.
Big guy?
Yeah.
Intimidating?
Yeah.
He was desperate for money and sometimes worked at the Sun Gym. Back in 1994, Lugo and his gang were offering cash for a little help.
He told me, look, I gotta talk to you about something. He owes me money and I need you to come with me and help me collect.
He agreed, and in November of 1994, brought his gun.
So you had your .45 with you?
I always carried my firearm. We were parked right there, and as soon as he came out of his restaurant, they saw him, so they said, there he is.
It was one of those days in Miami where a storm was coming in.
Schiller, a man who cheated death and whose harrowing ordeal was dramatized by actor Tony Shalhoub in a recent movie.
I made a lot of money.
Maybe yourself ought to spend some of it on a salad.
You know who invented salad? Poor people.
Why are you alive?
I guess it's divine intervention. I can't explain it.
Schiller's nightmare started just as he was about to head home after work.
I walked out to my car. As soon as I opened my door, I'm grabbed from behind by three guys.
And as soon as they grabbed him, the guy grabbed the steering wheel.
Was he screaming?
He was screaming.
They just kept punching me, and they had a taser, and they kept tasering me.
They were tasing him.
Begging for mercy?
He was screaming, you know, what do you want? What do you want with me? What are you doing?
So at that point, they dragged me to the van. It was a white van. They handcuffed my hands behind my back.
You must have been terrified.
They thought they were going to take me to kill me.
They don't take them. They put a tape in his mouth, and we took off out of here.
When we got to the warehouse, they called the boss.
The boss was Danny Lugo, the same man at the center of the Christina Furtin, Frank Griga murder case.
Told him the eagle has landed. I guess I was the eagle.
When I left, Schiller was sitting in the chair. He was taped up, hands and legs, and were beaten on him.
Schiller was tortured endlessly. Sometimes it was with fire.
Doorbell would yell, fire, fire, but real sick, and he burned me, you know, burned my skin. And then he'd do this again, and he would be laughing so hard he was crying.
Other times, they played Russian roulette.
They would place a gun to his head. They would take a revolver and spin it and pull the trigger. For the first couple of weeks, he wasn't even allowed to use a bathroom. He would have to urinate and defecate on himself.
But the worst was yet to come.
At this point, they thought, well, if you don't give us a list of everything you have, we're going to bring your wife and rape her here in front of you.
Schiller says he was allowed to make one phone call. He called his family, telling his wife to take their two young children and flee to Colombia. She chose not to call the police.
Why didn't she call police?
I don't know. I think at that point it was prudent not to.
And for some inexplicable reason, neither did any of Schiller's employees or friends or extended family raise the alarm. With his family safely out of the country, Schiller was still suffering. Finally, the daily torture was too much. He gave up, giving the gang everything.
They told me my death sentence.
He was signing over everything, including his life.
How much altogether?
It was $1.2 million in cash and assets and a $2 million life insurance policy.
And pretty soon, they had everything the man owned. They moved into his house. They changed the pool contract to their name. They were living there and partying in his home, and they were taking some of the furniture they liked and putting it in their own apartments, wearing his jewelry, driving his Dodge Viper and his Mercedes, and just basically living off of his money. Well, at that point, you can't let the guy live. So they decide that he's got to go.
Having forced him to sign over his assets, the Sun Gem Gang, led by Danny Lugo, was partying in Mark Schiller's house. In the Hollywood feature Pain and Gain, Mark Wahlberg's character depicts the depravity.
I know what I'm doing.
They were living in the house, in my house.
Despite his cooperation, Mark Schiller still remained chained like an animal in the Miami warehouse.
Schiller was tied to a pipe in a very small bathroom. That's where he spent the next 30 days, was handcuffed to that pipe.
The businessman and father was living in kind of a hell associated with a third world dungeon, complete with racial slurs.
They just told me we got a matzo ball, and
What does that mean?
I guess they were referring to the fact that I was Jewish.
Schiller can't forget the sick soundtrack that came with his daily beatings.
This whole time they were laughing uncontrollably. To them, it was just a fun game.
While they were beating you?
Yeah.
Did any of your captors show you any kindness?
Yeah, the guy that was a knight did, because they stopped feeding me. I was starved. I hadn't eaten for like 3 days. He brought me a can of canned ravioli, which I had to eat with my hand.
That would be one of the last meals the Sun Gem Gang intended for Mark Schiller to have, as Lugo put his final plan into action.
They give him alcohol to drink, get him all drunk.
They plied you with alcohol for 3 straight days.
It was probably more than that. It was probably like 5 days.
And then what did they do?
The last day, they sat me in a chair and they gave me this concoction to drink.
Liquor, tequila, vodka, and gave him sleeping pills. And eventually he passed out.
You were unconscious.
I was unconscious.
They put him in his Toyota 4Runner, in his SUV.
They drove the car into a light pole. Durbal was driving, and then doused the car with gasoline and set it on fire. And that was their attempt to kill him. They backed out about a block away to watch the car as it was engulfed in flames.
The problem is they don't buckle him in. The flames revive him enough that he stumbles out of the car and towards the road.
The surprise Sungjim gang moved in to finish off Mark Schiller.
And they see this guy that they just lit on fire standing by the side of the road, and they yell, run him over, run him over.
They drive forward and they try to run him over. They miss, but then they're able to back over him and then run over him again.
And they get back to their place and they go, you think we killed him? And they're looking at the dent on the car and saying, I don't know, it's not a big dent. Yeah, but we ran him over and we backed over him. I mean, he must be dead.
And what do you remember next?
Waking up in the hospital.
It would be months before Mark Schiller could grasp the full horror of how he ended up half dead at Jackson Memorial, Miami's top trauma center.
I was in a coma when they picked me up.
You were in a coma?
Yeah.
In the frenetic haze of the intensive care unit, burned and bruised, his pelvis broken, Mark Schiller tried to tell his story of abduction and torture to nurses, doctors, anyone who might listen.
I told them I was kidnapped, and they go, no, no, you were in a bad accident. And I go, no, 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 no. I was kidnapped, and they just blew it off.
So how many times did you insist that you had been kidnapped?
About three, and three then times. They gave up.
And he's trying to convince a nurse to give him a phone because he says he was kidnapped, and she just keeps going, no, you weren't kidnapped. You were drunk, and you hit a pole.
I knew they weren't going to do anything.
Finally, she gives him the phone. He calls his lawyer.
From there, it took just moments to figure out Mark Schiller needed a lot more than just a lawyer.
My name's Ed Du Bois. I'm a private investigator. We represent desperate people.
But even Ed Du Bois, with 50 years experience as a PI, had never heard anything quite like Mark Schiller's story.
The call was unusual because the story was so bizarre.
The PI met Schiller and believed his story. And soon both men realized Mark Schiller had an even bigger problem. Lugo and Delgado were intent on finishing the job.
I was a sitting duck.
Did you fear that Delgado and Lugo were going to come to the hospital?
Yeah,
to finish
and
the job?
My sister was there, and my brother, and we were all in panic.
I said, the easy answer is for you to get out of the hospital.
Why didn't either one of you go to the police at that point?
Well, we couldn't wait for the police.
Schiller's sister ripped the medical tubes from his arms.
And the doctor said, you can't move him. He's in critical condition.
Schiller's brother and sister booked an air ambulance, grabbed their brother, and bolted out of Miami, heading north, not a minute too soon.
We left at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I guess they came at 10 o'clock to look for me to kill us, all three of us.
Delgado and Lugo?
Yeah, at the hospital.
The now desperate Sungjim gang had tracked down their former captive.
As they're walking the halls of Jackson Memorial Hospital looking for him, he's on an air ambulance flight to New York.
1,000 miles from Miami, Mark Schiller, now supported by his family, began to heal, his body and bones fractured.
First, I can't walk. And second of all, there's who knows how many of these people out there.
Schiller would reunite with his family in Colombia. Weeks would pass, and strangely, despite his ordeal, Schiller did not report it to the police.
What person gets kidnapped, held for a month, and when he finally gets free, leaves the country and doesn't call the police for 4 months?
I think what's difficult to understand is why you did not go to the police sooner.
I did.
But according to authorities, it wasn't until April 1995, 4 months after his escape, that Schiller contacted police.
They want you to come to Miami to report it. I'm like, that's not happening. Who knows how many of these people out there? I run into them by accident, I'm dead.
Mark Schiller was asked to come and give testimony under oath 4 times. And he stood up not only the prosecutor, but the police to give that testimony 4 times.
Prosecutor Gail Levine would eventually lead the investigation and try the case. She says Schiller didn't come forward because he had his own credibility issues due to his alleged involvement in Medicare fraud.
The victim comes from Colombia. He has a lot of money, more money than I would imagine most CPAs in Miami have.
So after a while, you and Mark decided to go to the police.
Yeah.
But according to Du Bois and Schiller, when they finally did sit down with cops,
they've never listened at all.
They never went out, never read them their rights. They never asked them a question. They never even said, hello, here I am. We're breathing down your neck.
They went to Metro Dade's top unit that handles just crimes of this nature, just the biggest crimes. And they just didn't believe them.
It had been 5 months since Mark Schiller's ordeal. The muscle-headed gang had trashed his home and burned through his money. They were now hungry for another score.
And if the police had listened to him and had investigated, Frank Griega and Christina Furtin would probably be alive today.
By May of 1995, 5 months after his harrowing escape, the Sunjin gang had burned through all of Mark Schiller's money.
They've been partying and going to strip clubs and dropping thousands of dollars on strippers, and it was all his money.
With Schiller's fortune spent, the gang targeted their next victims, Frank Griega and his beautiful girlfriend, Christina Furtin.
There was never any pretense. They knew they were going to kill them from the outset.
The millionaire had it all.
Lugo and Dorval, on the other hand, they wanted to live that life.
The life Frank Griega had built on those dial tones of a sex phone empire.
It made me very proud that my kid brother made it so big.
You know, we were really poor when we were young.
It's a true rags to riches story.
Yes, it is.
His sister Susanna had seen Frank's love for the glittery side of the American dream.
Money was there for him to make other people happy and to play, to buy toys.
His wealth did afford him certain luxury items.
Oh, he loved cars, yes, he loved cars.
Lamborghini?
Yes.
Frank Griega's yellow Lamborghini was legendary. It was that car that caught the eye of Adrian Dorval. He'd been told about it by a woman who once dated Griega.
Dorval's face lights up and says, who has the yellow Lambo? And she says, oh, don't you know? That's my friend Frank. He's my old boyfriend. And he says, how would I know him? Oh, he comes into this dance club, Solid Gold, all the time. Don't you know him? Dorval wasn't that stupid. Bingo. We got our next victim.
Dorval and Lugo approached Frank Griega with a phony, made-up business scheme. And a meeting was set at the Solid Gold strip club.
And they told him that they were investors and that they had a way to make 20% return on the dollar.
But the real plan mirrored the violent abduction of Mark Schiller. Kidnap and torture Griega until he signed over every nickel he had and revealed to the gang where his assets were kept.
They also needed Christina.
Why?
They needed Christina because if Frank was missing, Christina was going to go to the police. Because why wouldn't she go to the police? Frank was completely legal.
And it's the one with the balcony.
Lugo and Dorval, posing as businessmen, lured Frank and Christina back to Dorval's apartment. Within minutes, Dorval was strangling Frank in the bedroom.
Dorval, not knowing his own steroid strength, either broke his neck or suffocated him.
And she screams, and Danny tackles her and injects her with horse tranquilizer, which they had basically bought to tranquilize the two of them.
And it killed her.
Not initially.
They had a dead person and another person near death.
23-year-old Christina Furtin, who loved animals, swimming, and had dreams of being a professional diver, was now shot full of horse tranquilizer. Then Lugo demanded she give up the access code numbers to Frank Griega's house.
And Dorval goes and speaks to her, and he comes back, and he says, his exact words were, the bitch is cold. They had injected her with enough horse tranquilizer to kill 4 1,000-pound horses. And now they're both dead, Frank Griega and Christina Furtin, and these two guys don't have a dime.
So what do they do with the bodies?
Well, they got creative.
These were some of the items that we were able to recreate from a Home Depot receipt that we found as to items that they purchased to use in dismembering the bodies.
With the help of George Delgado, Dorval and Lugo stuffed the bodies of Frank Griega into a couch.
and Christina Ferton into a large cardboard box.
So here you have these two muscular guys, and on a Saturday morning, during the middle of the day, it looks like they're moving. And they're moving boxes, and they're moving a couch, and what they contain are two bodies.
They took the bodies to an empty warehouse. The horror was just beginning.
So they went to Home Depot and they bought a chainsaw. And they come back and they're gonna use this to dismember the body. But the chainsaw doesn't have enough power. So these geniuses take this chainsaw back to Home Depot and return it.
You're kidding me.
And they brought that back and they ended up buying an electric chainsaw.
It boggles the mind that they would return a chainsaw that they were going to use to dismember these people.
There's a lot about this case that boggles the mind.
But the second chainsaw jammed in Christina Ferton's beautiful thick hair. That's when Dorble and Lugo reached for an axe.
And they started chopping the body parts for hours.
And then they disposed of the torsos in one part of the county in oil drums.
And they left those hands, heads, and feet in buckets at the 31-mile marker.
In the Everglades, on the Alligator Alley that goes from Fort Lauderdale to Naples.
I have never passed that mile marker without saying a little prayer for Frank and Christina.
Another gang member would dump Frank Riga's yellow Lamborghini on the side of the road in the swampy Florida Everglades. Police didn't need a GPS. The map was clear, and it led straight to the Sun Gem Gang.
And I remember saying, we don't have a missing persons, we have a very major homicide.
And soon Frank's big sister, Susanna, was on a flight to Miami.
The bodies were found that day.
The day you arrived?
Yes. Sergeant Jimenez and Sal Garofalo came and picked me up at the airport, and they explained that they just had, you know, that they had the bodies. Yes. Sorry. It's still very hard after 17 years.
As investigators put the pieces together, Mark Schiller's kidnapped story echoed like thunder.
They said, we think we got another case just like yours. Could you come down to Miami? I said, yeah, I'll come to Miami.
The Sun Gem Gang left a massive bloody trail of evidence. The last of the muscleheads would be busted when Danny Lugo's girlfriend, Sabina Petrescu, told police that Lugo was hiding out in the Bahamas.
We're trying to complete this investigation as quickly and as fast as we can.
The crimes and the trial would captivate and horrify all of South Florida.
It was disturbing on every level, and I've tried serial killers, but this case really got to me.
Almost 4 years after he was left for dead, Mark Schiller faced off again against the Sun Gem Gang.
I had jurors coming out to about here. It was just rows of jurors. In the morning, Lugo and Dorble would be brought across the bridge here from the jail.
In February 1998, almost 3 years after the gruesome murders of Frank Riga and Christina Ferton, Danny Lugo and Adrian Dorble were set to go on trial.
It was so encompassing.
The case would be career-defining for prosecutor Gail Levine.
From the day I got the call, from the day I started investigating it, from the day I met the victim's family, from the day I met everybody involved, from the relationship that I developed with police in investigating the case.
Lugo's girlfriend, Sabina, was granted immunity in exchange for her testimony. She knew all the gang's secrets and details of their plots, though she believed they were undercover CIA agents.
Sabina Petrescu is probably one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life, but she was also one of the most naive women I have ever met in my life. She was in love with Danny Lugo, and she thought he was her CIA agent.
100 witnesses, thousands of pieces of evidence. The case would drag on for 10 weeks, overseen by state's attorney for Miami-Dade County, Catherine Fernandez Rundle.
When you have a case that's that grotesque, and you know people suffered, what do we do to bring justice to the victims of this case, either in their name or for their surviving members?
And justice was what Mark Schiller got this time. He was in control,
as the prosecution's star witness.
Walking in and seeing Lugo and Derbo, I realized that I was in the driver's seat. They never imagined that I'd be sitting there accusing them.
The prosecution rested. Lugo and Dorbal's attorneys chose not to put on a case.
There are some times when, as a defense lawyer, you don't have anything to go on. You just don't. You can't claim misidentification. You can't claim anything.
What was the defense strategy?
Save their lives.
Jurors wasted little time making their decision. Within hours, they reached their verdict.
Daniel Lugo is guilty of first-degree murder as to Christina Fortin. Daniel Lugo is guilty of first-degree murder as to Frank Griga.
Dorbal was also found guilty, and both men were sentenced to death, a moment Judge Ferrer will never forget.
As I was sentencing him, Danny Lugo was standing there looking at me, and his eyes were watery. Noel Dorbal, on the other hand, he was joking. He was turning around to his girlfriend and making faces like a goofball.
You believe the jury got it right?
100%.
I think my final words were probably, may God have mercy on your soul.
Have you gotten justice?
What can sort of justice can be done? Okay, short of bringing him back. He was reaching for the skies, and the message that he had out there was, you can do whatever you want, and this is what these guys broke short.
Were you satisfied with the verdict?
Well, guilty, yeah, but I don't believe in the death penalty. I think being in the jail cell for the rest of the life is worse punishment.
But the ordeal wasn't over for Mark Schiller. As he left the court after the trial, he was surrounded by armed FBI agents who arrested him on charges relating to an extensive Medicare scam. The Medicare fraud that made Schiller such an easy target for the gang had come back to haunt him.
It was a sham. They never returned the money to Mark Schiller. Mark Schiller did not commit that $14 million worth of Medicare fraud.
In a highly unusual twist, Judge Alex Ferrer stood up for Mark Schiller during the federal fraud investigation. He described how important Schiller's testimony was in bringing down the Sungem gang.
He was treated like a prisoner of war, or actually worse, the torture and the beatings and the attempts to kill him and all of that. For some reason, it just felt to me that that should be taken into consideration.
Incredibly, one of Schiller's torturers, George Delgado, the Sungem member who had first told Lugo about Schiller and his millions, ended up helping the federal government make their case. In a plea deal, Schiller ended up serving 2 years in federal prison and paying $137,000 in restitution.
He felt betrayed.
His jail sentence is what he did, but the pain and suffering that he endured, that nobody deserves that. Did Mark Schiller deserve to go to prison? I leave that to the federal government. I wasn't involved in that at all.
Today, while Schiller refuses to talk about the charges, he does say he lost everything. His health, his home, his millions. And even now with a big Hollywood movie, he won't get a dime.
I'm a self-made man. I made a lot of money.
It's a comedy, which is unfortunate because there was nothing funny that happened to me. These were inept and incompetent people, but they were at the same time malicious and cold-blooded murderers.
Ultimately, the rest of the gang went to prison too. This co-conspirator was sentenced to 2 years imprisonment for his involvement in Schiller's kidnapping, and Jorge Delgado got 15. All told, seven members of the gang would do time.